see how they can help us clinically in terms of patient care. And again, I'm not going to bore you because it's the same data. We're really just taking this one step further, all right, based on the same stuff. All right, again, this is largely from the National LEAD study, the Longitudinal Emergency Medical Technicians Attributes and Demographic Study, which is called LEADS. And again, this is really largely based on the fact that our EMS providers are willing to do this as part of their normal duties, not after work, not before work, not for overtime, but during the course of their work. And again, there's literature that supports, that has shown that paramedics and EMTs can actually do things, again, like childhood vaccination, like setting up a point of dispensing clinics. They can be, you know, paramedics administer medications all the time. Why can't they hand somebody some Cipriflox? You know, why not? Makes sense. All right. So what we did here that was a little different in this sort of presentation was we took a look at the National EMS Scope of Practice Model. Now, for those of you that aren't really familiar with how sort of EMS gets its, curriculum or education, if you will, it's a little strange. The U.S. Department of Transportation is the federal regulatory agency in charge of saying what an EMT is and what a paramedic is. And it's specifically through the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration, or NHTSA. NHTSA, thank you, I never say that. In any case, and this has to do with the fact that the National Highway Traffic Safety Act back in 1968 originally was the first federal legislation that said, gee, you know, traffic safety and trauma from motor vehicle mortality is one of the largest causes of death in the United States. We should probably do something about that. Let's create an emergency medical technician. And that's how this sort of started. That's why the DOT provides regulatory oversight. They don't provide much on the order of regulatory oversight these days other than setting the national standard curriculum for emergency medical technicians at all levels. And what we took a look at was specifically that the Emergency Medical Technician National Standard Curriculum, or the educational objectives, essentially, for all three levels of Emergency Medical Technician. There are three. There's the Emergency Medical Technician Basic, which has about 120 hours of formal education. There's the Emergency Medical Technician Intermediate, which is an Emergency Medical Technician with approximately 180 to 235 hours beyond the Emergency Medical Technician. Then there's the Emergency Medical Technician Paramedic. Again, also an EMT, but beyond the EMT has, on average, 1,500 hours, 750 to 2,000 hours beyond Emergency Medical Technician of clinical patient care training, or essentially 1 to 2 years of college-type training. And we looked at their current scope of practice in terms of the skills, which is the top bullet, and then we basically postulated what could this person probably do that is a public health-related task, given what their education is. And we're going to take a look at that right now. So EMT basic providers, again, have about 120 hours of training. They staff ambulances, drive ambulances, take care of patients who are generally not in acute or life-threatening medical emergencies, and provide standard routine medical care and transportation. Their current applicable skills, they're taught how to do triage. They're taught how to do basic patient assessments, trauma and medical. They're taught, certainly, how to lift and move patients, how to provide medical transportation, and they're taught how to perform emergency communications, among a variety of other things. So, some things that we thought that these providers may be able to do, based on their current scope of practice, since in some cases they're allowed to give patient-assisted medications, in some cases they're allowed to give EpiPens, in some cases they're allowed to give nebulized albuterol or certain other pharmaceutical agents, in certain settings with the right medical oversight, that with some just-in-time training, we might be able to teach these people how to give a vaccination. Seems pretty simple. Also, some case and contact tracing. What do I mean by that? I mean that if you have a sick person in a hospital, sending somebody out, like a shoe-leather epidemiologist, to go to somebody's house to find out if anybody else is sick at their house is certainly something that you could do. But during a public health emergency, you may need your epidemiologist doing other things. Since EMTs and paramedics go to the people's houses all the time in the community, it would make sense that if they had some time and they weren't required for emergency response, they might simply be able to go to somebody's house, collect some data about the people in that home, and fax it, email it, provide it to the health authority. And then finally, patient education. Certainly they could distribute education to people in the community and give them the right type of training. All right, next level, emergency medical technicians at the intermediate level. Again, these are EMTs who've taken anywhere from 135 to 280 hours of training above and beyond the emergency medical technician level. Not too many states use the EMT intermediate. Pretty much just most of them use EMTs and paramedics, but nationally speaking, there is a level of care that is equivalent to this level, so we'll discuss it. These providers are also taught triage, and they have an advanced level of patient assessment, again, patient evacuation and transportation, communication, patient education, and they have an expanded scope of practice. EMT intermediates can start intravenous lines. EMT intermediates in some states can give certain medications like epinephrine, atropine, dextrose, Narcan, things like that. And some of them are able to do certain types of advanced airway procedures. We thought that, again, like the EMT, these people could be taught to give vaccinations, to do some case and contact tracing, and could also, because they have a higher level of medical knowledge, could perhaps do some chart abstraction. Could take a look at, you know, for instance, if, you know, the public health authority was looking at some sort of sentinel surveillance or syndromic surveillance, they could certainly look at the run reports from the last month or so and pick out everybody that had a, you know, a febrile prodrome, or pick out the people that had a respiratory illness and sort them out and hand them or give them to a public health officer. Finally, paramedics. Paramedics, the highest level of pre-hospital medical care, about, again, 750 to 2,000 hours post-EMT. Triage, advanced assessment, and medical screening, evacuation, communication. These people are trained at medical dispensing, all kinds of advanced level procedures. We believe that their scope of practice could, again, include case and contact tracing, chart abstraction, and treatments of patients with adverse reactions to vaccination or medication, as well as certainly vaccination and medication dispensing, since that's part of their normal scope of practice anyway. These people could be easily trained to do those things. The problem is, of course, that paramedics are the least prevalent amount of emergency medical services provider for a couple of reasons. The training is so long and their salaries are higher than emergency medical technicians. So overwhelmingly, we have a very EMT-heavy system, which is good because we use emergency medical technicians more than we use paramedics. But again, these are very, you know, fairly highly trained professional people that could provide, again, some assets to us during a public health emergency. So, as a natural extension of the emergency medical technician's scope of practice, it seems that they can provide some clinical skills that may be suitable during public health emergencies, whether it's to augment a medical reserve corps and staffing a pod or an alternate care site, whether it's going into an emergency department and serving as surge staff doing, you know, triage, basic medical care, vital signs, and medication distribution, whether it's setting up unique point of dispensing clinics at the firehouse or at their, you know, at the ambulance corps headquarters or whatever, or going and checking on homebound patients, going and checking on family contacts, going and treating people who have had adverse reactions to vaccinations or types of medical problems from prophylaxis. We believe that they're a fairly untapped resource that hasn't necessarily been well trained, but are more than willing and able to provide some public health surge capacity. So with that, I offer to you, and thank you very much. If you have some questions, I'm happy to entertain. It would. Yes, it would. And what's one of the problems that we're finding is that the state health departments are hesitant to create state protocols that to discuss an altered standard of care. Well, I'm not sure why, but they are hesitant to do so. However, specific scope of practice ultimately lies with the local medical director. So it is possible that if certain types of things, for instance, well, as long as it's approved at the state level, paramedics and emergency medical technicians can usually get approval to perform those things by their local emergency medical director or emergency physician. But it would take the state health department to certainly suspend or otherwise enact some sort of advanced scope of practice during a public health emergency in order for them to do that. Daily, right now, they would not be able to without special dispensation. Correct. Yes?
So just as an expansion on that, in California, saying is that in the declared health emergency, we can get an entity higher than the local county and either the health officer in that county or local EMS director in that county to expand the scope of practice to paramedics without vaccination. It could not occur at the local level. It would have to be blessed by the state.
There would need to be something that said during a declared public health emergency, the local health authority or the county health authority would be able to expand the scope of practice of the EMT and paramedic.
That's not inherent in the general premise that during a health emergency,
state, because in some states, definitely not. In some states, you would clearly need that directed from the state legislation. Yes. Excellent. Yes. Great question, a great point. I'm just going to repeat it for everybody. In New Hampshire, they ran basically a door-to-door mobile pod using paramedics, and they had some success. They did some just-in-time training, taught the paramedics how to vaccinate, and were able to go ahead and had some success. The question was, since I mentioned that vaccination was part of the scope of practice of the paramedic, would they need additional training? And let me clarify that. Paramedics are trained to give subcutaneous intramuscular injections and other types of parenteral medication administration. Knowing how to give vaccinations is absolutely within the purview of a paramedic. However, they don't have the authority currently to administer any type of vaccination, only certain types of emergency medications. So it's not that they don't know how to do it, it's just that they would need to certainly, you know, have a refresher, if you will, on the vaccine. Yes. Thanks. You know, I have to say, honestly, I don't know. It's really hard, since the Department of Transportation really has their hands tied in terms of, there's no federal oversight for EMS in terms of really regular. The only thing that the feds do are define the curriculum for EMTs and paramedics and advocate, certainly, for the EMS. I'm looking at Dr. Burns, since he's an emergency physician and he understands the challenge. That's one of the things that at the federal level that EMS advocacy groups have been trying to do, is maybe get oversights shifted to DHHS or to another health-related agency. But in terms of scope of practice, to answer your question, no. As far as I know, no. There hasn't been anything that's been talked about by adding something to the curriculum at the federal level involving anything I mentioned. Certainly there's potential, but I other than the APHA doing some work with the CDC, it's really state rule. Yeah, one more question. Thanks. Thank you very much for your comments, and thank you all for listening. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thanks, Michael.